Shoes. Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 56 of the Geocaching Podcast. Tonight, we're going to talk about watch lists, bookmark lists, and even field notes. Welcome, everybody, to the show who's on the phone with us tonight. We do this live, and we are live right now. Join us, 724-444-7444, and our talk is 7525, and our show notes can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. First, I want to throw a thank you out to everybody who have commented on our show notes at the geocachingpodcast.info. They're encouraging, and we love to hear from people. Anyone can go there and comment on any one of our shows. Just if you want to comment, go ahead and go to geocachingpodcast.info. They're encouraging. I love to read them. And so go ahead and put a word in there, and we love to hear it. So with that, I've got Daryl and Montu both on the phone with me tonight. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, pretty good.
Not bad here.
So this last weekend, I'll just throw this out. Since I don't normally start with the banter section here, but last weekend we were at Purdue, and anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that. But they had their Spring Fest, and we got two new caches that we hit there. One that was really close near our hotel, so I definitely could not pass that one up. And the other one that was right on Purdue's campus. We were there for Spring Fest, and it was pretty cool. We got to eat a chocolate-covered cricket, and we got to see a cow that has this hole in the side of its stomach, so you can kind of reach in there. Kind of weird, kind of geeky things, but they were kind of cool. If you want to see pictures of those, you can go to my blog, and that's Andy Blog. lehman-family.com. I got pictures up there. I'll put the link in our show notes. What have you guys been up to?
Well, for the wife and I, we went camping this past weekend with our church youth group that I work with. We were camping out at a park called Fort DeSoto, an old fort from the Civil War era. And while we were down there, there's two new caches that have been put in. We managed to find one, but unfortunately not the other. They're both micros, and the cache replaced them, I think, must have been using a Magellan, because the first one that we did find was about 20 feet off of the coordinates. But the hint that they had left allowed me to actually locate the cache. But the second one, we searched out to 30 feet even and still couldn't find that thing. So I guess that's going to give me one more reason to go back to that park.
Yeah. Daryl, how about yourself?
No, not a whole lot has gone on. Found a couple of caches this weekend with the BlackBerry and Trimble Geocache Navigator. That was really nice. I do like that. But we had an icky weekend out here, so we couldn't really do too much.
Yeah, I was using, for the cache that was on Purdue's campus, I used the Geocache Navigator, and it was easy to find. It was a virtual cache, and so it was fairly easy to find with the Trimble Navigator. But the thing that I found that I liked about it a lot is when we pulled off, I ran a pocket query for the local Purdue area, but on the way down there, I didn't run one like as far as a route goes. But I loved it when we stopped at like a rest stop or anywhere. I could just pull it out and see the caches that are around and see if there was one in the parking lot of the McDonald's that we were at or wherever. So that was what I found really helpful, is, you know, I didn't necessarily need to have a pocket query of the area that we were in. We could just go and find them.
Yeah, so, to me, that's a real strength of that product, is that instant, you know, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, pop it open, find a couple of caches if you want, and, you know, you're done. You know, no messiness.
Yeah, and that's something, but you guys are just tuning in for the first time. The Geocache Navigator is something that we're actually going to cover in a few weeks. Me and Daryl both have trial units on that, so we're going to go ahead and do a show on that fairly soon. But we'll leave the rest of the details on what we like and what we don't like for that show. We do have some listener feedback that was called into our voicemail line. We have a voicemail line, so if during the week you want to call in some voicemail, 206-350-3 GPS. This email or voicemail was from Red Lights, so let's listen to that.
Hey, Andy. This is Dave Rednar. This is David. I go by Red Lights. I was listening to the show this week and got a chance to hear the gentleman at the end talking about caching at night, and a couple people mentioned that it's always safer to go in twos or threes. I have a tendency to, when I'm actually visiting a new place with my family, if my kids are trying to go to sleep in the hotel, I will go out at night trying to find my caches. I just make sure I stick to plenty of places that I'm going to have plenty of light, you know, street lights, that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, I do have a tendency to be in parking lots a lot more, but there have been times when I've been in the middle of the woods. Daryl's best advice on that part, if you ask me, was making sure your cell phone is charged, because there have been times when I've been out there and I've said to myself, oh goodness, you know, am I going to be able to get back to my car, you know, because I forgot to mark my parking or things. So, you know, make sure that cell phone is charged. Love listening to the show. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks, Red Lights, for calling that voicemail in. Like I said, we love hearing from voicemail. Go ahead, and if you want to call us in, 206-350-3GPS. Now, we do have a few news items to cover in this episode of the Geocaching Podcast. Montu, do you want to kick us off with that?
All right, happy to. Garmin simplifies searching, sending and navigating locations through the Google... Why does it never seem to fail lately? Through the Google Maps. This works with business or categories. Doesn't work with home addresses. And you have to click on the send to phone, then drop down to the GPS.
Now, MapQuest has also done the same thing with the Garmin plugin. They partner to deliver MapQuest directions and maps directly to the Garmin GPS. And it does this the same way that the Google one does, except for it's a lot easier because it does work with the home addresses and the business. Any place you want to type in an address, you can go ahead and do that, and it goes and finds it. And it's easy to find. You don't have to go ahead and drop down to the send to phone and then click down to GPS. It just says send to, and you can click down to GPS. Real, real easy. They both are using the Garmin Communicator plugin, and so that's it's a really thing. I love the Garmin Communicator plugin. So, Daryl, what else have you seen in the news?
Well, Colorado has a software update again, but this one's only beta. It's 2.51, and the most interesting new feature that they've added, they've done a bunch of support, but the new function that's really cool is called Spanner, which allows the GPS to be connected through USB without going into disk mode. So what happens now is you'll plug in the USB cable, if you have the Spanner mode selected, and it will ask you if you want to go into disk mode or not, and if you tell it no, then you can go to your computer or whatever and use it just as if it's a connected GPS and, you know, track your position on the computer map. So that's really nice, and it makes it great because, you know, if you've got one of the inverters for your car or something like that that has that USB, now you can connect it and use it just for power.
That is really, really cool. That's one thing, I mean, that we noticed, obviously, when you first saw the Garmin Colorado, is that you couldn't do that. It was hard to make it connect to any of those other stuff because of those disk without going into disk mode.
So this is a big improvement in my opinion, and I've been very happy and actually using that quite a bit since we installed it on Friday, I think it was, even though it's only two caches that we found. It does make it a lot easier just working with the unit in general now.
Now, I want to remind everyone, too, that all the links to these announcements that we have in our news section can be found on our show notes, and our show notes can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. Now, let's move on tonight to our topic, which is watch lists, bookmark lists, and even field notes. I'll go ahead and start with the watch lists. What is a watch list for those of you who are new to geocaching? A watch list is basically an item that you can put any item on a watch list. And when you do that, you'll get an email every time a log is made, just like if you were the owner. So if you're the owner of a cache, you get email every time a log is made. If you put a cache or a travel bug or a coin on a watch list, you get an email every time there's a log. So that's helpful. Why would we want to do that? Well, for the caches, if you want to see people that are finding it, you know, like maybe you are the co-owner or a co-placer, because I've seen several caches that, you know, like I've got a few. I mean, granted, the fact that my son is a co-owner, so it's not, he doesn't really, he's too young to read email, but there are other cases where people who are old enough to read email are the co-placers of a cache. And you, maybe as a co-placer, you want to see every time it's logged. And put the cache on the watch list, and you'll get an email every time there's any log made to it. Now, an event cache, you'd want to put that maybe because you want to see who else is attending, if there's logs that are placed as attending logs, you know. So that you can do that so you can see who's going to be coming to your event or who's coming to a event. Now, as the owner of a cache, you can see that there are, you know, maybe 3, 4, 10, 15 people watching your cache. But there's no way to know who is watching your cache. So the best way, if you want to find out who's watching your cache, you can just go ahead and send out a note in the cache saying, and just ask them, who's watching this cache? And email me if you're watching. And sometimes they'll respond, sometimes they won't. Now, Daryl, do you or Montu have anything else to put into this category as far as why we would want to or why we would not or anything else as far as anything goes for that matter?
Well, one of the big reasons that I end up watching caches is for those caches that I haven't found and I suspect might be missing, just so I can keep an eye on them and see if the owner does some maintenance on it or if someone else might have found it and also had the same kind of problem. It, you know, it's just an easy way for me to keep my eyes on it so I can go back and check on it, you know, if it is in fact replaced or if I just, you know, botched it and missed the cache the first time I went out.
Yeah, for me, I also do that for, like, when a cache is first published. Like, on Friday, I think it was Friday, either Thursday or Friday, there was 3 new caches published around here, and I knew that I was not going to be able to get out to them on Thursday, so I put them on a watch list and told it to email me, you know, or because they're being on a watch list, it was going to email me if it was found, so that way I know that I don't need to rush out and get it. I can get it, you know, whenever I get around to it, if it was found instead of getting the first to find. So for me, if caches are published and I know I'm not going to be able to drop and go to the first to find right away, I put them on a watch list. I know that's foreign to you, Daryl, because there's no way that a cache would set longer than 15 minutes, you know, in your area. But in our area, that does happen. So that's how I kind of use them, too.
Yeah, it only happens if it's a really, really tough puzzle or something.
So, Montu, do you have any input here?
Yes, actually, I do. With the caches, one thing that I do is sometimes I go out and I try and find them, and I, of course, sometimes don't. Nobody's perfect. I don't find them all first time. But sometimes by putting it on a watch list, the person who might come behind you or a couple people that come after you, they might say something in their log that tips you off that, oh, you mean I should have looked there for the cache? Because sometimes they just leave this little clue, whether intentional or not, and I realize, oh, I don't believe I was looking in the wrong spot or I was so close, but yet not quite looking right there. And also with the event caches, one thing that, and this is true down here quite a bit, a lot of our caches are potluck meal caches, and everybody in their logs is logging what they're bringing. So if you haven't decided yet what you're going to bring, having that watch list saves you from having to read through everybody's post to find out what everybody's bringing, because you've been getting the emails all along with what's going to be there. So now you know, okay, well, so-and-so's bringing the potato salad, so I guess I better not bring it because I know they always bring 2 gallons of it or whatever. and so you know what's going to be there and what to bring. So watch lists definitely come in handy on the events for more than just finding out who's going to be there. Also, what's going to be there? What can
that
I enjoy to eat?
Yeah. Now, another feature is the bookmark lists, and that is similar but different. Montu, do you want to touch on those?
Okay. With a bookmark list, this is something you can keep private or you can share it. It's a list of, you know, kind of like favorite caches, or just like with your bookmarks with your web browser of sites that you like to go to. Now, with a private bookmark list, you can do it of favorite caches, caches you intend to get, but you don't want them on a watch list. You don't, for some reason, you don't want to be getting bothered with those emails, but yet you want to remember, okay, one of these days I've got to get over there to get this particular cache. It's one that I want to find, which is one of the many uses of the bookmarks that can come in handy for you. Sharing it allows you to share with other people. You know, they might go to one cache, and for instance, the caches at Starkey Park, which is where I've got most of mine. If you go to just about any one of those caches, you'll see at least one or as many as three bookmark lists that are posted there. One is my favorite caches in Starkey, and then there's a couple of others. And you click on that, and then you get a list of the other caches that this particular person thought were great that's there in that park. And so that's where it can really help out, you know, to share the knowledge. You know, it's whatever you decide, really, as far as how you bookmark it, what your bookmark list is for.
Now, another thing, too, that you can do is you can request a pocket query from all the caches on a bookmark list. So, and I've seen this in our area because Midwest Geobash is in our area. So a lot of times what people will do is they'll maybe make a bookmark list of all of the virtuals in the area or all of the easy caches or some, you know, a helpful bookmark list that people may want to find, and then you can just request the pocket query and get all of those caches for yourself. It makes it really easy. You don't need to do a lot of the legwork. Another thing I've seen recently, too, is someone has created I think it was actually user Squamloon has created a pocket or a bookmark list of all of the flash mobs that are going to be happening here next week. Another thing, too, is you can use this list to, like a watch list, because you can have geocaching.com email you whenever the cache on the list is logged. And so you can kind of use it like a bookmark or a watch list. Now, the last thing we're going to talk about tonight is the field notes. And Daryl, you have got more experience on these than either of the other two of us. Can you talk about those?
Sure. Now, the first place that we saw the field notes was with the Geocache Navigator, and that was very cool because it was just something that happened live, but the Garmin Colorado also built support for the field notes in, so when that happened, they gave us the option now to upload the field notes. So if you have a Colorado, all you need to do is grab the geocache_visits.txt file and upload that to the GC web server. And it will then process it very similar to the way that it processes the field notes from the Geocache Navigator. And to get into that, you go to your account page on GC.com and click on the right side where it says Access My Field Notes. You have the option, if you have the Geocache Navigator, to link the account to your GC account. And then they'll just pop up right there automatically. But if you have the Colorado, you just click the upload from Colorado, or upload field notes from Colorado. I actually didn't make notes as to the exact link. But you just pop that open and select the file, upload it, and then you get a list of all of the caches that were logged in there and what date it was done on. So it's real quick and easy because now you don't have to really remember what it is. You just click them in order and go and make your little notes. But unfortunately, it doesn't have any way to add notes to, you know, in the field to what you found, any kind of issues. You just get to pick if it was not found, found, or needs maintenance, basically. So if you have something that you wanted to make notes of, you'll still have to take a piece of paper or something, write it down, and make your notes when you actually upload it to GC. Now, the Colorado does have that text file, and some of the users have gone and kind of reverse engineered that since it is simply a text file. And there's now programs appearing for the likes of the Pocket PC that will create these files for you. And some of those are actually allowing you to put notes in. So if you want to go a little bit further in your paperless caching, there's a few of those that have started appearing. The most notable one, and only one that I think I've seen, is one created by Bishop that works on the mobile PC, or the Windows Mobile Pocket PC platform. And it allows you to create the log with the notes in there as well, so that it's pretty much just an upload and go, and it's actually a lot nicer than using those logs from either the Colorado or from the Geocache Navigator.
Yeah, and that's something I've played around with a little bit. I will go ahead and put a note or a link for that in our show notes, just like I'm going to do with everything else that we talk about here tonight. That's it for our main topic tonight, unless either of you two have anything else to put in or anyone else has anything to put in. If you want to talk, if you want to say anything else here, go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. We'll get you on the phone here. We have a few more things to cover, and then that'll be it for tonight's show. I want to remind everybody, too, that the flash mob that Sunday and Sandy are from the Podcatcher are organizing is this – no, not this next weekend, the weekend following that. This coming weekend is the CITO Day. And if you've got a CITO event in your area, I would encourage you to go. And then the following week is the flash mob. We also have a promo for the roundtable. So, Daryl, want to hit that? Mark your calendar for May 3rd.
We're fast approaching the 8th anniversary of the original Stash and the first live Cachers of the Roundtable. We invite you to join us May 3rd as we talk about what caching is to us.
We'll be recording through the TalkShoe service at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, that's midnight GMT, or May 4th at 10 a.m. in Sydney, Australia. Sign on to TalkShoe at TalkShoe.com or call in at 724-444-7444 and select TalkCast ID 7525 to listen and participate in the show.
Even if you can't join us, we'd love to hear what caching means to you. Just call our voicemail line at 206-333-1206, and we'll use it on the show.
As always, visit the Cachers Roundtable website for more information at cachersroundtable.com.
Definitely make sure to mark your calendars for the May 3rd event. It's going to be a fun one, and you'll get to hear all. We'll be live, and we're going to do a live Cachers Roundtable, so that'll be definitely fun. Make sure to join your calendars. With that, that's the show tonight. Thanks to you, everybody, for joining us. Have a good week, and we'll see you here next week at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.